Numbers chapter 13. The Lord said to Moses, "Send some men to explore the land of Canaan, which I am giving to the Israelites. From each ancestral tribe, send out one of its leaders." So at the Lord's command, Moses sent them out from the desert of Paran. All of them were leaders of the Israelites. These are their names. From the tribe of Reuben, Shemua, son of Zakur. From the tribe of Simeon, Shaphat, son of Hori. From the tribe of Judah, Caleb, son of Jephunneh. From the tribe of Issachar, Igal, son of Joseph. From the tribe of Ephraim, Hoshea, son of Nun. From the tribe of Benjamin, Palti, son of Raphu. From the tribe of Zebulun, Gadiel, son of Sodi. From the tribe of Manasseh, a tribe of Joseph, Gadi, son of Susi. From the tribe of Dan, Amiel, son of Gamali. From the tribe of Asher, Sether, son of Michael. From the tribe of Naphtali, Nabi, son of Vophsi. From the tribe of Gad, Geuel, son of Machi. These are the names of the men Moses sent to explore the land. Moses gave Hoshea, son of Nun, the name Joshua. When Moses sent them to explore Canaan, he said, "Go up through the Negev and on into the hill country. See what the land is like and whether the people who live there are strong or weak, few or many. What kind of land do they live in? Is it good or bad? What kind of towns do they live in? Are they unwalled or fortified? How is the soil? Is it fertile or poor? Are there trees on it or not? Do your best to bring back some of the fruit of the land." It was the season for the first ripe grapes. So they went up and explored the land from the desert of Zin as far as Rehob toward Lebo and Hamat. They went up through the Negev and came to Hebron, where Ahiman, Sheshai, and Talmai, the descendants of Anak, lived. Hebron had been built 7 years before Zoan in Egypt. When they reached the valley of Eshcol, they cut off a branch bearing a single cluster of grapes. Two of them carried it on a pole between them, along with some pomegranates and figs. That place was called the Valley of Eshcol because of the cluster of grapes the Israelites cut off there. At the end of 40 days, they returned from exploring the land. They came back to Moses and Aaron and the whole Israelite community at Kadesh in the desert of Paran. There they reported to them and to the whole assembly and showed them the fruit of the land. They gave Moses this account. "We went into the land to which you sent us, and it does flow with milk and honey. Here is the fruit. But the people who live there are powerful, and the cities are fortified and very large. We even saw descendants of Anak there. The Amalekites live in the Negev. The Hittites, Jebusites, and Amorites live in the hill country. And the Canaanites live near the sea and along the Jordan." Then Caleb silenced the people before Moses and said, "We should go up and take possession of the land, for we certainly can do it." But the men who had gone up with him said, "We can't attack those people. They are stronger than we are." And they spread among the Israelites a bad report about the land they had explored. They said, "The land we explored devours those living in it. All the people we saw there are of great size. We saw the Nephilim there, the descendants of Anak come from the Nephilim. We seem like grasshoppers in our own eyes, and we look the same to them." Chapter 14. That night, all the people of the community raised their voices and wept aloud. All the Israelites grumbled against Moses and Aaron, and the whole assembly said to them, "If only we had died in Egypt or in this desert! Why is the Lord bringing us to this land only to let us fall by the sword? Our wives and children will be taken as plunder. Wouldn't it be better for us to go back to Egypt?" And they said to each other, We should choose a leader and go back to Egypt. Then Moses and Aaron fell face down in front of the whole Israelite assembly gathered there. Joshua, son of Nun, and Caleb, son of Jephunneh, were there among those who had explored the land, tore their clothes, and said to the entire Israelite assembly, "The land we passed through and explored is exceedingly good. If the Lord is pleased with us, he will lead us into that land, a land flowing with milk and honey, and will give it to us. Only do not rebel against the Lord, and do not be afraid of the people of the land, because we will swallow them up. Their protection is gone, but the Lord is with us. Do not be afraid of them." But the whole assembly talked about stoning them. Then the glory of the Lord appeared at the tent of meeting to all the Israelites. The Lord said to Moses, "How long will these people treat me with contempt? How long will they refuse to believe in me in spite of all the miraculous signs I performed among them? I will strike them down with a plague and destroy them, but I will make you into a nation greater and stronger than they." Moses said to the Lord, "Then the Egyptians will hear about it. By your power you brought these people up from among them, and they will tell the inhabitants of this land about it. They have already heard that you, O Lord, are with these people, and that you, O Lord, have been seen face to face, that your cloud stays over them, and that you go before them in a pillar of cloud by day and a pillar of fire by night. If you put these people to death all at one time, the nations who have heard this report about you will say, 'The Lord was not able to bring these people into the land he promised them on oath, so he slaughtered them in the desert.' Now may the Lord's strength be displayed just as you have declared. The Lord is slow to anger, abounding in love and forgiving sin and rebellion. Yet he does not leave the guilty unpunished. He punishes the children for the sin of the fathers to the third and fourth generation. In accordance with your great love, forgive the sin of these people, just as you have pardoned them from the time they left Egypt until now." The Lord replied, "I have forgiven them, as you asked. Nevertheless, as surely as I live, and as surely as the glory of the Lord fills the whole earth, not one of the men who saw my glory and the miraculous signs I performed in Egypt and in the desert, but who disobeyed me and tested me 10 times, not one of them will ever see the land I promised on oath to their forefathers. No one who has treated me with contempt will ever see it. But because my servant Caleb has a different spirit and follows me wholeheartedly, I will bring him into the land he went to, and his descendants will inherit it. Since the Amalekites, the Canaanites, are living in the valleys, turn back tomorrow and set out toward the desert along the route to the Red Sea." The Lord said to Moses and Aaron, "How long will this wicked community grumble against me? I have heard the complaints of these grumbling Israelites. So tell them, 'As surely as I live, declares the Lord, I will do to you the very things I heard you say. In this desert your bodies will fall. Every one of you, 20 years old or more, who was counted in the census and who has grumbled against me. Not one of you will enter the land I swore with uplifted hand to make your home, except Caleb, son of Jephunneh, and Joshua, son of Nun. As for your children that you said would be taken as plunder, I will bring them in to enjoy the land you have rejected. But you, your bodies will fall in the desert. Your children will be shepherds here for 40 years, suffering for your unfaithfulness until the last of your bodies lies in the desert. For 40 years, 1 year for each of the 40 days you explored the land, you will suffer for your sins and know what it is like to have me against you. I, the Lord, have spoken, and I will surely do these things to the whole wicked community, which is banded together against me. They will meet their end in this desert. Here they will die. So the men Moses had sent to explore the land, who returned and made the whole community grumble against him by spreading a bad report about it, these men responsible for spreading the bad report about the land were struck down and died of a plague because before the Lord. Of the men who went to explore the land, only Joshua son of Nun and Caleb son of Jephunneh survived. When Moses reported this to all the Israelites, they mourned bitterly. Early in the morning, they went up toward the high hill country. "We have sinned," they said. "We will go up to the place the Lord promised." But Moses said, "Why are you disobeying the Lord's command? This will not succeed. Do not go up, because the Lord is not with you. You will be defeated by your enemies, for the Amalekites and Canaanites will face you there. Because you have turned away from the Lord, he will not be with you, and you will fall by the sword." Nevertheless, in their presumption, they went up toward the high hill country, though neither Moses nor the Ark of the Covenant moved from the camp. Then the Amalekites and Canaanites who lived in that hill country came down and attacked them and beat them down all the way to Hormah.
Any comments?
Yeah. Chapter 14, verse 1, and the entire congregation lifted up their voice and cried, and they wept.
Okay.
Referring to how the people were giants in the land that they were supposed to conquer, and they were very strong, and these men brought back an evil report. I was just thinking how anxious people are to believe their report.
Okay. What is an evil report?
A report that doesn't agree with God.
What was your question?
What is an evil report?
I think
it's
untrue.
That which is not true. It's a lie. Okay, so.
Or exaggerated.
Now, what's so strange about this particular story, we will go more detail a little later on. Supposedly, if they had 600,000 man army, nothing could stop them. Let's see, once again, we have to go this word of knowing what Aleph's meant, and we have, I'll have to give a detailed research on that one, but it's quite fascinating with it that they have this excuse, it would appear, but it appears these men deliberately told a lie. Not just told the truth and exaggerated it, but actually reported something that was contrary to truth. Daniel.
Well, yeah, the initial report that they give to Moses is one thing.
Yeah.
But they go throughout the camp and seem to make it much worse in the description when they retell it to the rest of the people. To make it worse, and like, this is really, really bad. We can't do this. These people are horrible. And it's purposely making people sway against
The question we have to ask ourselves is, why did they do that?
Yeah.
What was their motive? What was the purpose behind it all? Why were they given a report? And let's read the report they gave to Moses that Daniel brought out. It was quite different than the one they gave to the people. What was their purpose behind it all? Ever thought about that?
Yeah, I did. I couldn't come up with an answer.
They didn't want to fight for it.
I don't know if they realized it or not, but it seemed that they had forgotten God once again and were relying upon their own strength, their own will, their own abilities, or lack thereof, to go forward, forgetting that God was the one that brought them there that far already and had already delivered them many times beforehand. They were looking to themselves to get there and not God's. And when they recognized it was so much larger than what they could really do in and of themselves in their own mind, they gave the report from their own perspective with zero faith. There was no faith involved at all. And it bred fear more than faith. And any negative report of any sort, and that's why our media today does so well, they thrive on the negative, they expound upon the negative and forget that there may be some good to be reported. Bad news travels fast.
Quicker than good news.
Usually. Yeah.
Well, also, it's kind of like retirement or having not having enough money. Oh, dear, I think I'm not going to have any money. And then you think, okay, now wait. For how many years has God been providing for the Heber family and for Ellie's poor retirement situation? He's not going to let go. He never has. But it doesn't mean it's not like for until you remember, oh, wait a minute, God provides.
The other thing that's amazing is, and I've seen that in my home life, in years past, you get to a point where, all right, you realize you've blown it, you weren't thinking in faith, God has obviously provided, but then you presumptuously go forward when the blessing is taken out from underneath you because of your own sin, again, presumingly going forward and then fail, fall flat on your face. It just is a whole human scenario of people operating in their own terms, their own understanding, without God.
Human nature.
Okay.
What's the significance of the 40 days?
It's always a motive, it's always a testing period of time, but there's a reason why there was 40 days. Daniel?
The comment that Ellie was making regarding the whole initial shock of, I don't know if you knew this, these spies had 40 days to get over their initial shock of how big these people were. And they pointed out, Phil, their report, which I'm still quite upset with, is initially they pointed out all these various people that they see, the various tribes and where they all live. But they point out that they actually did in fact see some that were descendants of the giant people. And then go out and report in the land and tell all the congregants, the whole land, everybody's this big. It's not like, well, yeah, so there were a few, but all of the tribes were obviously of normal size and stature, normal buildings, normal city sizes, normal stuff. It just still bugs me. But people do that.
Yeah.
We all, we're arguing something, if it's part of human nature, we want people to agree with us. So we will exaggerate our point of view enough until we finally get the point across where we feel that person agrees with me. Now I can go forward. Now I have that game. It's people do it all the time. They do it in arguments. They make their position so extreme so they finally find somebody else to agree with them so they don't feel so bad. But it's still irritating, though.
The other thing, Nate, they've always done, anytime things don't seem to go their way, it's let's go back to Egypt. Let's elect another leader, go back to Egypt. What is causing them to do that? I mean, he's led them all that time, but they always, okay, let's get a different leader and go back to Egypt.
Okay, a lot of questions, good questions, okay? I want Daniel to jump ahead of the story for a moment. What does it say in the book of Deuteronomy?
That's too big of a question. Explain what you mean. A lot of things.
What did God send them, or did the people request that they send spies in?
I don't remember. That's been too long
ago. Deuteronomy, first chapter, we're jumping ahead. Verse 22 to 40 is the same kind of story. But Moses says, you wanted me to send spies in there. So therefore, I did.
Oh.
Okay, so now we get a story behind the story a little bit. Now it's very fascinating that when we look at chapter 13 here of Numbers, we have a series of names of certain men. Now they're not the same leaders that were listed in the beginning of Numbers. The leader of each one of these tribes didn't go out and spy on anybody. They had a different group of men that decided to go out and to spy upon the land. They weren't the leadership. You understand what I'm saying? So the motive of these people were what?
To get into power,
get an influence, because they're the ones now who got some information. Do you understand what I'm saying? Now, the motive behind the motive was, we got Numbers that says, I didn't want to do this, but you insisted it, so I went to God and God did what he says. Send them out. And pass by the land, you know.
That would make you mad.
And now God comes back and he says, because you have rebelled against me the 10th time, no more will you enter into the promised land. So we look at these. Now, all these men died except two, real quick. So these are men who, not necessary that God picked, because God didn't pick them, did he? He said, Moses, pick them. So Moses picked him, he sent him in. Now the ones that, listen for a minute, in the first part of Numbers, it is God who said, so-and-so will be the leader of Judah. So-and-so will be the leader of Ephraim. So-and-so will be the leader of Benjamin. God named the leadership in the first part of Numbers. Here, their leadership is not even listed. They're just a group of men.
But it says they're leaders of the Israelites.
They were not the head clan. They were not the leaders of who they were supposed to have been. They're probably captains of tens, captains of hundreds. They're of lower, quote, rank or authority. That's what spies do. They're not in charge of anything. They go out and do what someone else tells them to do. Yes?
Could there be a possibility that Moses had told the real leaders, hey, pick someone from your tribe, bring him to me for a spy?
So that could very well
have been picked by, you know.
By someone else. That's true. I'm not saying that's true. You got a good story. But I find it very interesting that the motive behind these guys is probably was different than what should have been, because you have Deuteronomy saying, I didn't want to do this. We're just supposed to go in. Ellie.
Deuteronomy chapter 1, verse 20. I said to you, you've come to the mountains of the Amorites, which the Lord our God is giving us. Look, the Lord your God has set the land before you. Go up and possess it as the Lord God of your fathers has spoken to you. Do not be afraid or be discouraged. And every one of you came near to me and said, let's send men before us. Let them search it out for us and bring back word of the way in which we should come up, and the cities in which we will come. And the plan pleased me well, so I took 12 of your men, one man from each tribe. They departed, went up to the mountains, came to the valley of Eshkol. They took some fruit and brought it back. It's a good land, saying to us, it's a good land which the Lord our God is giving us. Nevertheless, you would not go up, but you rebelled against the command of the Lord your God, and you murmured in your tents and said, because the Lord hates us, he has brought us out of the land of Egypt to deliver to the land of the Amorites to destroy us. Where can we go up? Our brethren have discouraged our hearts, saying the people are greater and taller, and the cities are great and fortified up to heaven. Moreover, we've seen the sons of Anakim. And I said to them, don't be afraid and don't be terrified. The Lord your God will go before you. He'll fight for you according to all he did before Egypt, in Egypt before your eyes, and in the wilderness where you saw how the Lord your God carried you, as a man carries his son all the way that you went to come to this place. Yet for all that, you did not believe the Lord your God. You went... and who went in a way before you to search out a place for you to pitch your tents and go by the cloud and the fire. And the Lord heard the sound of your words and was angry.
Didn't believe. So we have a story behind a story. And Deuteronomy, a little bit more clarification of what's going on in this particular incident. Now, 40 always represents what now?
Trial or suffering.
Now, remember, God didn't send them out there. The people wanted to have their people be sent out there. It took them 40 days. Now, I don't know why it took them 40 days, but it just took them 40 days. Now, it says the beginning of the grape.
Fall.
So it's fall time. So we got approximately... it will happen, looked like it could have happened during time, the Feast Tabernacle period of time, thereabouts. And they were gone for 40 days. But, you know, they went into what's called the Negev, the south. What was the land in the south today? It is, that grow a thing. It's totally wasteless land. It's wasteland, worthless land. But what do we have here?
A land flowing with
milk. Land with flowing milk and honey. A land that had huge grapes, very large crop. He said, now I want you to check it out. He said, see if they had any trees. Now, does Moses want to know if they had trees or not? No. Now he says, very interesting. He says, now I want to see whether their cities, are they strong or are they weak? Are the cities camps like us? Or are they fortified cities? Well, they'd be fortified cities because they didn't live in tents. They weren't camping out. They weren't in scattered all over the place. People lived there. They had homes. And God says, I will give you a land that has, you don't build the homes. but the holes are built for you already, you move into their homes. You take their homes. So it was not a land that was poor. It was not a land that was desolate. It wasn't a land that had nothing. It had a land that had everything that the people wanted to support. They needed for their own support. So the evil report is inside is something more than just saying, oh, they are giants. I don't have anybody got an explanation of why they would come up and say, we can't take over the land?
Well, as you pointed out, they were after power, and that was the motive behind the whole scenario. Then, yeah, if I'm after power, it's my best interest to dispose the person who's telling me to go do something so people will follow me instead.
Yeah.
And I'll lie, exaggerate, twist the truth as far as necessary to get that job done.
So in one way, they were challenging the leadership of Moses, and we also see challenging the leadership of Aaron. Because both of those men prostrated themselves down the ground and submitted themselves unto God. They didn't want to submit. They didn't want to have to. They wanted basically the ownership, or they want to take over the tribes in one way, except for two of them, Caleb and Joshua. Their object was, wait. Though they were telling the true report. The true report is there. Now this is very fascinating. I want you to go to chapter 4. Very interesting. I had researched this thing up many years ago because of a strange word that Caleb said, or was it Joshua? Verse 6, and Joshua, the son of Nun, and Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, who were among those who had spied out the land, tore their clothes, and they spoke to all the congregation of the children of Israel, saying, the land we possess through, the land we pass through to spy out is exceedingly good land. If the Lord delights in us, then he will bring us into this land and give it to us, a land that is flowing with milk and honey. Only do not rebel against the Lord, because there's a point of rebellion. No, this evil report was not just all bad thing. They were rebelling against God, period. When God said, go up and take. They didn't want to take.
And they knew it.
Yeah. Now, only do not rebel against the Lord your God, for the people of the land, it's a strange word now, for they are our bread. Their protection has dropped from them, and the Lord is with us. Do not fear them. That's a weird phrase. Now, what do you think they meant by that? They are our bread, and their protection is departed from them.
God opened the way for them to walk right in, walk to the land, take it.
Okay.
It was there right in front of them.
There's a fascinating thing about manna. It has twofold meaning. One, in the morning, it is what?
Gathered.
It is what?
Gathered in the morning, isn't it?
Oh, wait. It comes down with the dew.
Come down with the dew,
and it rots.
And then they can make things out of it, yeah. But it does what?
It rots.
It rots. So basically he said, not bread like we think of bread we eat every day, but talk about the manna they were receiving. That was their bread. And guess what? And it's strong. But it's like, you know, their protection's gone by noontime. They're going to be a piece of putty for us. We could just, they're like manna. Yes, they're powerful. Walk in there, and by noontime, it's all over with. They don't have any strength. All their protection is gone. Why would bread be announcement here as a proof? Okay? Why would bread be the proof of their protection being removed? Because they had manna.
Yeah.
That's what they were associated with. That's what they made everything with, was the manna. And you cannot keep manna until afternoon, but it's just gone. You know, it's goodbye. It melts. It's gone. So when Joshua and Caleb use this as an expression, which seems strange as bread, and then turn around and says, and their protection is like bread, is gone. It doesn't last. You can't keep it the next day. It's an interesting phrase, what that word manna. Manna has a twofold meaning. It's firm and hard, and then it melts away. It's there, then it devolves. It goes into nothing. It's worthless. You know, give us our day, our daily bread. But do before noon, please. After noon, it's gone. But, you know, it's a very phrase, unusual phrase that they use in this announcement, because it's really odd. And all the congregation of said to stone them with stones. Why? Why would they want to stone them for?
Because they're bringing conviction of their own sin. I mean, it's like they're telling them the truth and they didn't want to hear it.
That's typical, isn't it? Yeah, that's typical, right? You tell somebody what's going on, and they don't like you anymore.
They want to stone
them. Understandable, I guess. Now, as we continue on with this story, there's a very interesting thing about Caleb. Now, what's so fascinating about Caleb? Interesting word, Caleb.
He has a different spirit.
All right. What kind of spirit did he have?
That's what I got underlined to ask you.
What did he say the spirit was like in him?
He follows God.
All right. He believed. Okay. He read in this chapter, you don't believe me. Because you don't believe me, I'm going to curse you. So the spirit of belief. Now, remember what John, back John said it, but we'll go you all, before God comes on the scene and gave His Spirit into you, you have a spirit. You become a living being. You become what's called a nephesh. The life goes in and goes out of you. It's called a spirit thing. Not like the animals, but when God breathed air into Adam and Eve, He breathed into what's known as the spirit. A man has spirit, able to think differently than animals. If we didn't have the spirit, we would then therefore not be anything more than an animal. We respond like a dog or a cat or anything else under the sun. Apostle Paul says, who knows the spirit in man except man? Who knows the spirit of God except the spirit of God? What that phrase means, okay, is can you, as a human being, understand the actions of a dog? Yes or no?
No.
Yes, you can. You can tell that dog will respond to you and obey you and respond to what he's supposed to do. You know, and if he doesn't, you know what's going to happen. That dog will always be obedient to you. Now, what about, will a dog understand the actions of a cat?
No.
Will you understand the actions of a cat? Yes, you can. You have command over the cat. The cat does not have command over the dog. Dog don't have bad command over the cat. But you understand how cats work. You understand how cats think. You understand what they do. You know the nature of the beast. You know the nature of the lion. You know the nature. Or if you don't, then I'm sorry. You're not aware of what God has let you know. His Wanda has said, oh, you get the name he gave to Adam. You get to name the animals. The only way Adam could name the animals, he got to know the nature of the animal. Now, do you know the nature of man?
Yes.
Yes. You know the nature of man. You know what that man will sin. You also know man can do good. You also know man can do evil. And when you're talking to somebody, you can tell what's going on in their mind almost before they begin to respond to you. You begin, because the spirit that you have, a human spirit you have, can begin to communicate with another human spirit. You can also communicate to a dog, but the dog cannot communicate back to you. The dog can't come up and say, oh, let's have a conversation. The dog's going to do one thing, either obey you or not obey you. And that you can understand. The cat cannot have, the cat has no idea how your mind works. The cat has no knowledge of what you can do, but you have knowledge of what that cat can do. You understand what I'm saying so far? So when we look into here, we say Caleb had a spirit. What was his spirit like? Can you identify it? Can you track it down? Can you understand the spirit that was in Caleb?
Mm-hmm.
What was his spirit?
Obedience to God.
And what was the spirit of the men who didn't obey?
Rebellion.
And you could tell that spirit within them. And so the spirit, to explain itself, that Caleb had a spirit of obedience, response, acted upon the word of God. The others had a spirit that was contrary to it, going against it. Do you understand what I'm saying so far?
Mm-hmm.
Ellie?
What he's saying is this wasn't an accident. This was open rebellion. There was no trick here. The people weren't
correct.
Tricked by the lie and fell into it. They just flat rebelled.
And that's why God got mad. Because one thing God has and is His Spirit. Now, that's one spirit we can't access unless He decides to let us know about His and who He is. Now you begin to understand the Spirit of God. If you don't have, how many people in the world have access to the Spirit of God?
Everybody.
No. He only gives it to those who obey. Alright. Now, what we have, this golden opportunity, we have the access to the living spirit. Because that living spirit has made communications with us. Now, only God has the power to emanate His spirit into you. You don't have the power to emanate your spirit into Him. It's only one way trip. You understand what I'm saying?
Kind of like dogs.
Kind of like a dog, right? Kind of like a dog. We don't have the full knowledge of God, but God let us know something. So when He says, I want you to do this, if we're a good dog, we obey. If we're a bad dog, we rebel. And guess what happens? You have a dog that rebels. That dog gets punished. You know? If that cat gets in the way, guess what? You hurl it outside. You know, the cat's obedient, no problem. The cat comes into your house and decides to rip up your curtains. What are you going to do? Oh, poor pissy cat. No, you're going to be mad at that cat.
Cats go up.
And sometimes, you know, if you have a dog and you just plant this wonderful garden, and the dog says, I'm going to dig a hole. You know, you say, goodbye, dog. You just ruined my garden. I'm going to chain you up. I'm going to put you in a pen. I'm going to do what? But you're not going to do that again. See, we understand the nature of the dog. But the dog doesn't understand your nature.
Yeah, you do.
It doesn't understand your nature. All it does is going to obey or not obey. Okay? So we come in the spirit of Caleb, to answer your question, is he had a spirit of obedience. And that's different. And it didn't have to have the spirit of God for him to have obedience. It's the actions of the spirit of Caleb who obeyed compared to the action of the spirit that was in the rebels. Their spirit was to disobey. And when you disobey, evil reports are going to come up.
I did not remember that Moses actually changed Joshua's name.
Oh, yes. Very fascinating. Why would he change Joshua's name? What was his motive behind? I mean, why would Moses come along and say, by the way, I'm no longer calling you that. Your name is going to be this. What did Moses understand? Yes.
Where did he change it?
Well, it says there in...
Verse 16.
Yeah, verse 16. We're so used to calling him Joshua, we don't think he had a different name. And apparently he changed his name. It would appear at this point in time. It would appear.
Well, he's one of those shadows of things to come, isn't he? He's a leader.
What is it that Joshua was to do?
He was the one that was going to lead them into the promised land.
All right. Now, that's very clear in the book of Hebrews. And we look at the book of Hebrews, it says that Joshua led them into the rest, into the Shabbat, into the resting place. Okay? So, it's a very fascinating thing that now, since he is a takeoff or a this particular name he has is exactly the same name as we have as Joshua, just pronounced with a different, spelled exact same way, but different vowels. Okay? Joshua, in a sense, delivered them, not from their sin and their transgression, but delivered them from their work, brought them into the land of rest. For 40 years, they were trying to survive. Yes, Daniel.
Yes, buddy, that parallel works fairly well in that the Messiah's task wasn't just to get people out of their sins. The point was to allow them to survive the Torah that was going to kill them all. And so in Joshua's case, that's precisely what he did.
Precisely.
He didn't deliver them from Egypt. That wasn't his task. Moses and God took care of the sin issue. His task was to save them from God.
Yeah.
Essentially.
Yeah.
That's what he did.
Yeah.
Because their curse, their actions led them to all perish in the wilderness.
Yeah, perish in the wilderness. So I got to deliver them out of perishness.
Right. Yeah, because God said, all right, you're going to die and I'm going to kill you. That's it. End of story. And he said, well, all right, how do I save these people from God? I mean, it's a play on words. I'm not saying...
Right. I understand.
Using the terminology. And that's precisely what he did. He saved them from God, so to speak. Saved them from their own screw-up that God had to kill them now because they did things they weren't supposed to be doing. Not from sin, the lack of belief instead.
Messiah
wasn't
belief.
After people to save them from the Torah because of sin, per se. More so, lack of belief of God.
Lack of belief.
He started to trust man instead when he showed up. And now, quit trusting men. Quit trusting spies. Quit trusting Pharisees. Trust what God told you to do. And Joshua doing the exact same thing.
Exact same thing.
Makes sense why Moses returned.
Do you understand the spirit of Joshua was like the spirit of Caleb? Mm-hmm. Belief. Trusting in God. Over everything else, and knowing that was going to be, it was going to be happening. It's an interesting parallel of why his name was changed, and then it leads us to when you think of Yahshua, he didn't just die for your sins and deliver you out of that. He's leading you into the promised land. He's leading you into the kingdom of the living God. Okay, Joshua led them into the kingdom, in that sense, was going to turn into the kingdom of Israel, but not at that first time. There was a transition period for the Israelites to be able to go through a growing process of the judges. That's another story behind the story. And then they were led into a kingdom under King David and King Solomon, which is a foreshadow of being led into the very kingdom of God. All right? It's a picture here that is so fantastic, I don't know whether or not it could be completely brought out or understood. But the story behind the story, when you look at these two, you might want both these chapters read together because it tells you something of a thing that is going to happen or is in your life happening today. You are being led in to the kingdom of God by Yahshua or Jesus, because now we learn to live by every word that proceeds out of His mouth, as the Hebrew says. We have had prophets in the past. We have angels in the past. We've had God speaking to people in dreams. Now we have Jesus, the Son of God, who now we respond to. And when you responded to Jesus, He is the what? He is the Word of the living God. So you learn to live with every word that proceeds out of the mouth of Yahshua.
Another really interesting thing here that parallel in the New Testament, so these men responsible for spreading the bad report about the land were struck down and died of a plague before the Lord.
Yeah.
So lying before the Lord, you know, like to Moses and Abraham, the same, was it Ananias and Sapphira, the same thing? So it's interesting. I mean, it's like you better not deliberately lie to,
or bring false reports, not just lying, but also bring an evil report, which is a little bit different than just saying lie. Well, I'm scared to go in there, and I don't want you to. I'm scared, so I want you to be scared. The reason I'm scared is because those guys are giants. I'm scared. No, they were telling something different than just, oh, we can't take them. Probably behind their breath, but you know, if we didn't have Moses, we could. Yes.
Do you think that that's kind of somewhat parallel to what the two witnesses of God will bring? They're obviously bringing fire down for a reason. Perhaps if someone is basically saying, you guys are full of it, to people who are witnessing for God, God's prophets, that it seems like it will probably face the same sort of
scenario. Well, it's called a plague then.
Yeah.
We don't know exactly what kind of plague it was, but they were wiped out that day or the following day. They were wiped out real quickly. Yes.
It's easy for me to read this and have some sympathy toward these people for being afraid. But that's not the issue. And I think it's the same thing with the two witnesses. It's not the matter of being just not believing these witnesses when that happens. It's a matter of being angry and hating the fact that they are right and you don't like it.
Well, it's also wanting the power.
It's
always part of human nature. The pride is so powerful in human beings. You know, before the fall, of the pride falls, or what's that statement?
Pride goes before.
Oh, yeah, pride goes before the fall, yes.
Pride goes before destruction.
Destruction.
It's the high spirit before a fall.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
That's where it is.
Jeff?
Yeah, in chapter 14, where Moses is, pleading for mercy upon the people.
Oh, yes.
Verse 17. He recalls what the Lord Himself said, and that the Lord is slow to anger, abounding in love, and forgiving sin and rebellion, yet He does not leave the guilty unpunished. He punishes the children for the sin of the fathers to the third and fourth generation. Now, I guess that, there is often a confusion between punishing the sins of the fathers to the children, the third and fourth generation, and stuff you read elsewhere about each one will die
his own sins.
His own sin.
All right.
Could you clarify?
Okay. What happened? Did the children receive the punishment that their fathers rebelled?
Not the exact same.
Part of it.
No.
Part of it. They didn't get the full brunt of it. That is true. But you will receive, as a child, the results of the sins of the fathers unto the third and sometimes fourth generation. What I'm saying is that a child, when we have Ezekiel where if a man changes and says, I'm not going to be like you, Dad, and he decides to be upright and decent, then the sins will not be passed on to him. But we're talking a spiritual concept here now, not on a physical one. This one here is very physical. They did receive a punishment for 40 years. Guess what happened, you know? They got old. By the time they go in, they're young and vibrant, young men at 20 and 18, 19, they can do an awful lot of work. By the time you get 40, he says, okay, son, start going to work because I'm tired. I'm going to take a break. They walk into the promised land at age 40, at the, you know, at least
50,
you know, and lo and behold, you know, half their life is gone. Oh, yes, so they do receive it unto the third and fourth generation. Their grandkids, in a sense,
received it too.
Received it as well, because now they're, quote, the grandkids now are in their 20s, or about teenage year, maybe a little older, and now their mom and dad finally get the land. All right? How long did it take Joshua to take over the land? Now, at least portions of it. It took quite a while for them to take over that land. Joshua lived, what, 120, was it? Something like that. It took a while for him to get up there and had to do a lot of fighting, a lot of war. Now, if they had walked into the promised land, as God has said in the very beginning, what did Joshua and Caleb say? They'll melt before us, and we'll live. And they could have been blessed. Their children also could be blessed in the third and fourth generation. All right? Just as much as you can, the child can learn or get the end results of it. You know, it's kind of, with God, if only that one person got punished and the children don't receive the end results of it,
they won't learn anything.
They won't learn anything. Nothing to be learned. No growth, no maturity. The spirit is not being developed. Hope is not even around. Any more comments?
No, I was just, my comment was, if somebody died even of a plague, that effect of a child growing out, you know, without a parent, is going to affect the way their children are even raised and taught.
Now they have to go off and become orphans.
Yeah, and then they're
or fatherless, at least, you know. And now, and what the Bible says, if the fatherless, they don't have a father, guess what? They become dependent upon the state to support them until they come of age. They become a product like we have in California,
welfare.
That's the word I want you. Thank you very much. I'm trying to miss that one word out. Welfare is not negative to God. All right, He actually commands that to take place. But not socialism. But it doesn't work for a boy, by the way, a man. He has to work for a living. He doesn't even get a dime off the state. He has to work for a living. That's cool, God. I like that part. Anyway, so does that kind of answer somebody's questions? We gone through this. Two interesting chapters, aren't they?